You're listening to The Stack, first broadcast on the 28th of June 2014 on Monocle 24. Call it a journal, call it a magazine. Find a typeset, get some good shots, and go to print. But is making a good new publication that easy? We ponder the rights and perhaps wrongs of the magazine-making process. With the independent publishing boom well and truly in full swing, it seems the presses are on overdrive, pumping out a plethora of new titles from Bristol to Buffalo. It's time to take a good look at the offering. What differentiates some of these titles? Are we seeing an editorial and visual expression of a particular time and place? Or are some editors a bit too directly inspired by what they're seeing elsewhere on the newsstand? We'll be discussing this and more with a trusty magazine editor and seller. We'll also be heading to Portugal, where some frustrated magazine people have taken to the performing arts.
This live magazine gives the possibility that the print magazines can't do. Cabide is as strong as a print magazine, but we had a little something.
All that and plenty more besides coming up today on this episode of The Stack, Monocle 24's dedicated print industry review and analysis programme. Hello and welcome to The Stack on Monocle 24. I'm Tom Edwards in the Stack chair today in lieu of Tyler Brulé. Now, I'm happy to be joined here in the studio by magazine expert and friend of the programme, Mark Valley, a Brazilian who came to Britain via Switzerland, where he studied economics in Lausanne. He's now the editor of the widely respected art and visual culture title Elephant, and he owns Magma, a string of high-end bookstores throughout the UK specialising in art, graphics and design periodicals. Mark Valley, welcome back to The Stack. Good to have you with us as always.
Hello.
Now, you're a man of many talents, of course, with your bookshops, magazine work, all of this kind of thing. And I want to talk mainly about some changes to the magazine and some strategizing that you've been doing, and it's obviously prompted you to take a good long look at a lot of different magazines that are out there come to make those decisions. So I guess tell us first of all about Elephant and what's happening exactly, what you've been up to.
Elephant's been going on now for 5 years, and it's been already more than a year that we've been uncomfortable with how Elephant was, and we didn't want to do incremental changes. We wanted to do one big change and almost like relaunch the magazine, which is what we're in the process of doing now. The new issue will be the September issue, the new look of the magazine and the new content, because it won't just change in terms of design. It will, the editorial structure will change, the whole feel of the magazine will change. And so while I was doing that, I started by, I mean, in the way, same way that I started when I first did Elephant or first did the magazine before, which is I just picked every magazine I had in the bookshop and just looked through them and see what I liked, what I didn't like, etc. And something became very clear, actually. There was a lot of white out there.
Mm.
It was stupendous, the amount of white space that there was on our shelves. And it was not just a trend, but it was a trend starting to turn into a cliche. It's this thing of like, you put a small picture or a picture on a page, one picture, a lot of white space around it. The covers of magazines have also turned very white. There's less and less text. And that idea of just having, say, one page with a bit of text, normally one column of text, sometimes two columns of text, even maybe a pull quote, and then a big image on the other page facing it. And I must say the first few magazines that I looked that were like this felt nice. After number 10, it felt like, oh my God.
The same. Well, before we look at some examples of what you're talking about, I just wonder why you think that might be. I mean, as you were looking through, is it because people are too wary of standing out from the crowd? Is it just a lack of imagination? What do you think, with your trained eye on it, why do you think people go down that
avenue? I actually think it's for a very good reason. I think there's a rediscovery of what printed matter is about. And I think this is about re-exploring printed matter for what it is and how it can make itself different from the internet and digital media. I mean, there's always a longing for being a book in all of those magazines and giving people a reading experience. And surprisingly, that ends up meaning putting less text, which is quite weird.
Mm. Well, it's kind of counterintuitive.
Exactly.
If it's more bookish, yeah. You kind of want more words.
And I mean, this trend for me started very much with Joop van Beneken, and already just with Butt magazine, and then it became even bigger with Fantastic Man. Then a new generation of magazine makers or creators seem to have taken this to a whole
degree
new level. Yes, with say, Kinfolk is.
Well, let's leaf through. So you've got Kinfolk there. So as you were doing this research and you leaf through, I don't know where in your in the order that was. Was it one of the early ones or
this was
one
of the early ones, and it completely threw me as an editor, because in a way, when you're thinking about how much stuff do you put on the page, I suppose is the your main question as an editor. You're always thinking, okay, do I throw lots of pictures here? Do I cut this text from 1,000 words to 500? And this was completely disconcerting, because a lot of the features, the whole first part of the magazine, you just have one image on this side with a white frame around it, one piece of text there, I'd say that's about 200 words, laid out in one column as if it was a book page, and probably a French book rather than a British book. And it just goes on and on like that. A title, somebody writing about this picture, and that's it. And then there's all the other things that go around with it, which are sort of laying things out in an ordered way on the page. So you put like 20 objects that are related in an ordered way, like 20 pencils like this or 20 pens. And I mean, it's beautiful. And it's I suppose nowadays signifies taste and curation, which is another buzzword of the moment with the internet. Everybody wants to curate stuff. But it gets a little bit repetitive, and yeah, there's a lot of white space everywhere, a lot of white banners. Like, we must have at least 10 magazines that have this sort of a picture underneath and then a white band at the top. I don't know for how long.
Well, no, and it's interesting to me, because obviously one thing you've got to be mindful of as an editor, as a creative, is newsstand impact, or, you know, maybe on a table in a shop like Magma, for example, rather than on a traditional newsstand. Yeah. But that's a risk, isn't it, to be so much part of the herd that's all going the same way. You're going to lack impact. That's going to stop people from picking.
Because I think the first time the Kinfolk came out looking like that, it looked really distinct. And then Serial came out, and that was really white background and with a very minimalist photograph at the front. Very beautiful. And it signified beauty, it signified, you know, refinement. And now it's starting to mean sort of, for me at least, run out of ideas, you know, I'm just following a trend, which I'm sure those people aren't, because they've actually created that trend, most of them. But I wonder what's going to, I'm kind of longing for what comes next. So, for example, when I look at the magazine personally, I just like to see more on the page. I like magazines that have more dynamic layouts. And I also like to feel that there are more different angles of approach to articles rather than I'm a cool guy, I'm doing this, and here's a text about me and a good photograph of myself. I like when there are interviews, when there are essays, when there are different kinds of features with different surprising angles. And with these formulas, this is quite restrictive what you can actually do with it. I also noticed that the photography that these magazines demand is kind of change. You know, they demand a certain type of very clean kind of photography, very ordered, very geometrical, very carefully composed. And again, I'm not quite sure about it. I mean, I still like the old sort of high impact, you know, Life magazine type of photography, which you can't get in that formula. It just doesn't fit in.
Let's continue to delve through this stack, because it's quite an inviting stack, though, as you said, many of them have certain similarities of appearance. What have you got there, for example?
I found this other magazine called Hole and Corner that I didn't know. It's their third issue. At first, I was a little bit put off by a certain nostalgia aspect of it. It's all about craft, and it's all about real people in, you know, distant parts of the UK. But then when I started reading, it's actually really good, and it's very warm. It has the same Kinfolk look and feel, but they do it a bit differently, and they do it in a way that is just warmer. So, for instance, there's this guy, this artist, who's a stained window artist, and that was a really fascinating feature.
And a bit more variety, even just in terms of fonts, even the imagery. There's some big full bleed. It's a bit more of a blend. Is that very important then, to have that mix within a title? Dare we look ahead to Elephant's Evolution?
Yeah, I think so.
Will it be a dynamic mix, or will there be an identifiable sort of theme overall?
You won't yet have an identifiable theme, though some issues may have actually an identifiable theme. But I was having a meeting with the designers lately, and they said something that I almost fell on my knees and thank God for it, which was they mentioned when we were getting to the main part of the magazine, the well, which we call Encounters, the publisher asked, so what's the system here? How does it work? And I said, there's no system. Every feature will change it. And there were four big interviews, and every one of them was laid out differently. Sometimes the pull quotes were jumping spread, sometimes they weren't. And it was just like, wow, thank you. You know, it's not going to be the same formula over and over again. And I like that. I like when things vary, jump around, and it is going to be like that. There's going to be a lot of variety. But talking about Holland Corner, for example, they did, you know, that thing of laying out objects in a certain way. They do exactly that in this issue, but they do it differently. They do it in a flowery way, as if they were doing flower arrangements, which is quite
They
nice.
Look sort of like organic organic images almost.
Exactly.
Don't they?
So this definitely has a bit of a different angle.
So job well done for them, perhaps.
Yeah, no, really good, actually. No, it's a very good magazine.
We'll continue to delve through Mark's stack of magazines. There's plenty more still to look at. We'll be back with some of those right after this.
The numbers have been crunched, the editors have deliberated. And now we can unveil who came top in our 2014 survey of the best cities to call home. We'll discover the risers and fallers and a few new entries in our July-August summer double issue. It also includes a 28-page travel guide to South Tyrol, the Italian Alpine province, where you're as likely to hear the locals speaking German and where great hotels, bars and restaurants fill every cute town. And there's more.
In the affairs section, we find out why there is so much to admire in Toronto City Hall, particularly now a certain mayor has gone. We introduce you to the best police force, fire brigade and ambulance services in the world. We find out how to keep the lights on in Bamako, plus there are 10 great essays on how cities work, or at least should work.
In culture, our building is Brisbane's GOMA, a contemporary art museum that's putting a smaller city right in the middle of the art map. Then we get high on the scent of ink, investigating how local media makes the places they write about. And we go to the cinema, profiling the independent spaces that give their cities happily square eyes.
Monocle's July-August double issue is on newsstands around the world now, or get yourself a subscription at monocle.com.
You're with The Stack on Monocle 24 with me, Tom Edwards. And now to Lisbon. They say a crisis leads to creativity, and nowhere is that more true than in the Portuguese capital, where a designer and a journalist paired up to create Cabide magazine. But this is not like any regular publication, as Cabide is not printed nor digital, but is in fact live. Monocle's Carlota Rebello went to Lisbon to find out more.
Lisbon, known as the City of Light, with its avenues marked by tram wires, century-old architecture and its famous fado music, has become the home of Portugal's media scene. Lisbon's newest publication is somewhat unusual, as it's actually not published at all. Cabide magazine presents itself as the world's first ever live magazine. Instead of turning to digital, Cabide turned to the past, as Luís Alegre, one of the founders of the magazine, explained to me.
This problem, it's the start for a new kind of magazine. And this new kind of magazine is not a real new kind of magazine. It's an old and new kind of magazine, because this is a live presentation. And live presentation is an old media. It's like the Greek theater. But at the same time, this is a new media. We think the mashup between the old fashion of doing things and the new social media combined can produce a new product.
Cabide was showcased to the public at the beginning of the month. During 4 days, the magazine took one of the most prestigious stages in the country, the iconic São Jorge Cinema. But should we call this a magazine or just a festival themed around the media world? I asked this to João Pombeiro, the other founder of Cabide.
Why this is different from a festival, from other shows? Because it's a journalist planning. We will have the cover of the magazine fixed in the front of the building. We have a masthead. We have the statues of a magazine. So the work in the journalist manner is like doing a print magazine.
So okay. It's the same editorial planning, everything from cover to cover.
It starts with that, but this live magazine gives the possibility that the print magazines can't do. Kabid is as strong as a print magazine, but we had a little something. Arts installation, theater, a music concert, a DJ set, and all these things, all these programs of Kabid answer the question, can we take care of ourselves? It's very important because it's a journalist job, it's an editor job, no? And it's very funny for me and curious because it's the first time that I think in Portugal and I don't know, in Europe, that a journalist and a designer share the editor-in-chief. We discuss the editorial planning, and this is the other advantage of the Kabid.
With Kabid, the cover price is the theater ticket. The contents and masthead are the program given to the public, and instead of theater or art reviews, you watch an original play and wander through an exhibition. João told me more about these similarities.
For example, the main features. In a print magazine, the interview with Eduardo Lourenço, I think in a print magazine will be 10, 12 pages, like the article of Pedro Rosa Mendes. This is the main subject. It's not a review of the documentary or the film, it's the film himself. We have illustration, we have the art installation, and like the magazines, we offered some extras. It's not a DVD, it's a theater, and it's not a CD, it's a live concert of one of the greatest Portuguese new bands.
With performances by the Portuguese band You Can Twin Charlie Brown, a premiere of a film, the production of a play and a DJ set for the final goodbye party, Kabid's program is alive and kicking, putting journalism on the map again for the Portuguese capital.
That was Carlota Rebelo speaking to the guys behind Performed magazine Kabid in Lisbon. You're listening to The Stack here on Monocle 24 with me, Tom Edwards. Still with me here in Studio One of Midori House is Mark Valley. Mark, we were talking a little earlier about the problems from, I guess, a sort of a homogenization of magazines, a certain editorial lines being aped by many different editors and creatives. And I wondered if we delve deeper into the stack of magazines you have before you today, whether you can find something next that shows us, well, maybe another offender, if you like, or someone who's actually doing a particular job and doing it rather well.
Well, next I've got the Modern Design Review, the first issue, which, I mean, I really applaud. It's fantastic and daring, and it's great that somebody's doing a magazine like that. And obviously at Magma, I welcome it in terms of having something to sell that is actually another design magazine. However, I wasn't entirely convinced about the design. I mean, it's designed by GTF, which I suppose are you know, fantastic, amazing designers. And it's very, very good. I mean, the design in itself is very beautiful and it has great impact and it looks beautiful on the page. But it's again that really minimal thing of like you often just have one picture with a bit of text at the bottom, and I do find that slightly frustrating. It feels like it's going into a designer's catalogue rather than, you know, it will look great in a... It looks great, but I don't think it gives you that magazine experience. I wouldn't take that with me on a plane. I'd get bored after half an hour. It would have to be a very short flight.
Well, I wonder, it was interesting, at the beginning of the show, you were talking about the influence of the digital realm on some of these areas. Is that a contributing factor here? Do you think people are wary about
to what in their minds is confronting the reader with too much copy and too much information, and they're always thinking almost in this digital way that it needs to be very dynamic, it needs to be image driven, it needs to be constantly changing. Are we losing sight, or some of those creatives losing sight of what a magazine is actually supposed to be offering?
Which is bringing us information, isn't it? I believe so. I think it's great that people try to turn magazines into objects, into things that you want to collect and admire and look at. But still, I like to get something out of it. I like to learn about stuff. And I think information is important. And it's something that we have realized with Elephant, that before we were, I mean, we're still a quarterly. And we went from the assumption we are a quarterly, we'll make something timeless. And we weren't so bothered about information, about being off the moment. And after a few years, we just got uncomfortable with this idea of timelessness. And I thought, actually, let's make it really timely. Let's make it about now. So we're having a lot of sections that are just about now, what's happening now, which is one of the main things driving this change. And let's have some info and let's have some, you know, that kind of
stuff. Well, it can make it a lot more dynamic because it keeps it current. I'm getting more and more excited, Mark, to read the next installment. Yeah. Let's continue to go through. What have you got here?
Yeah, I also looked at Port, and this is the latest issue, and I thought that was actually really good. I hadn't looked at Port for a while, but I thought this was warm, dynamic. It didn't always come off in terms of the design and everything, or even the articles, but I really enjoyed it. I thought there was something very strong, and the design was beautiful, and the articles were original. And I like when magazines do things like they've done with Ralph Lauren, when they take a figure like Ralph Lauren and they do a profile, a pretty long biographical piece on them. And I like that, this kind of bigger than life stories, you know. I like this issue. I thought it was really good.
So they've done it. It's a job well done for them. And interestingly, of course, they've sort of shied away from it. There's a certain kind of monochrome quality to it, but they've shied away from being
too white,
which is a problem.
And I think from the beginning, they've always had their own approach to say, how do we do a men's magazine after Fantastic Men somehow? And I think they've done it very well. And they came with a vision, and the vision is just getting stronger and better.
That's interesting, because I think one of the important things that often crops up on the stack is this sort of singularity of vision, and to have that very clear purpose and to stick to it. And there are some magazines that we feature quite often that have a unique approach to how they're put together. One such being Boat, which I think you have a copy
of. Yes.
And this is quite interesting in terms of how it's put together. The very concept is pretty novel. And this one, again, what did you make of it? Because I know it does have a similarity in terms of its cover appearance.
When I saw it, I thought, oh no, not another magazine with a picture at the bottom and a white stripe, big white stripe at the top. But then when I started looking at it, I was completely taken aback. It's really good. They almost made it look, for me, it makes me think of a travel journal or something, but in a really beautiful way. The photography is original and different. They focus on one city per issue, it seems. It's the first I come across, Lima, but they seem to have done some interesting cities like Reykjavik. And I didn't know that Mario Testino was from Lima and was very active in Lima in terms of promoting culture and art there. And I hadn't read about featherweight fighting, like featherweight as in...
Cockfighting in
Peru. And it was good. It was a very nice reading and browsing experience. So that was a very nice surprise, actually.
It's interesting, this blend of sort of where these titles come from, whether they're about a place, they're driven by a sense of place, or often whether they're driven by maybe a brand and a sense of that brand. And I know you have B Magazine. Talk to us about this one.
Well, B Magazine is a Korean publication, and with every issue, they focus on one brand. So it's a whole magazine for a brand, and it's kind of in a book-like format. And this issue is about Havaianas, so the Brazilian flip-flop brand. And for me, I'm Brazilian, and Havaianas, when I was a kid, meant you don't have enough money to buy a shoe or even a trainer, so you go to the supermarket and you pay a pound and you get a rubber flip-flop. And so it meant you're poor in Brazil and working class. And it's funny how it completely changed its image.
And it could not be more different now.
Exactly. It became a classic. And it's interesting how it means all these different things. It means summer. It means I've partied too hard and I can't fit in my shoes anymore. It means I'm a hipster and I'm trying really hard to look chilled. It means, I'm going to the swimming pool. I don't know. It means all of those things. It doesn't mean...
And how does B Magazine kind of reflect that? mix then? What's the sort of the editorial tricks? Because there's a lot of content in there, isn't there?
There's a lot of very good photography, and they seem to take different aspects of the brand. So, for example, in the beginning, they start with a lot of quotes of different people about the brand. So in this case, there's a party where these A-listers were given flip-flops, Havaianas flip-flops at the end. Then there is a lot about surfing and Havaianas, how Havaianas fits in with surf culture. Then they compare Havaianas with other flip-flops, and they compare the prices of all these different flip-flops, which is quite a surreal thing, actually. There are some that are more than £500. And then they look at Havaianas within Brazilian culture. They look at Havaianas within Brazilian history. It's really, really good. It's really well put together.
It's actually fascinating stuff. We're almost out of time, Mark. Just finally, as a sort of final thought, it strikes me there is almost a bit of a divergence between what it is to be a magazine and almost what it is to be a journal. You mentioned that journal. Yeah, it's almost splitting into something different. Do you think that's important to make those kind of distinctions, or should we just be more focused on making great magazines and not worry too much about the semantics of journal, magazine, zine, whatever you want to call it?
Yes, I think the distinction is completely blurred. I suppose the idea of a journal would be something that feels more writerly, that is actually more properly written, whereas a magazine is more of an open source thing. It's funny that I should use a web metaphor for
that.
But I still like the idea of journals being written, of people actually thinking about writing journals, and that there is something a bit different between a journal and a magazine. It's blurred, but I still like the idea of a journal, actually.
So it's all about great writing. I think that's something we can always celebrate on the stack. Mark Valli, editor of Elephant, which we will look forward to seeing in, you said, September.
Mid-September.
Yeah. Keep a close eye. We're looking forward to seeing it. And the owner of Mangler Bookshops, Mark, thanks very much for being on the stack.
Thank you.
That brings us to the end of this 96th edition of The Stack with me, Tom Edwards. A special thanks to my guest, Mark Valli, and of course to our producer, David Pleasant, and our studio manager, Claire Urban. If you have any comments or queries, as always, drop us a note, info@monocle.com. And don't forget to come and see us again next Saturday at the very same time. In the meantime, you can listen again at monocle.com or via iTunes or SoundCloud. But for now, from me, Tom Edwards, until next time, it's goodbye.